The following shiur has been presented by Rav David Grossman, Rosh Beis Havad Binyani Mishpat, and is brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center.
The Gemara in Ksuvos, Daf Pei Gimel, Amud Aleph. The Mishnah tells us in the beginning of Perek HaKosev, HaKosev le'ishtei din udvar mainly b'nechsayich. The Mishnah discusses a person who is getting married and they want to stipulate from the onset that some of the standard classical chiyuvim that a wife has to her husband, he wants the marriage to be based on a stipulation that that those obligations on her part should not be obligated. There's a few obligations discussed in the Mishnah. There's the obligation of peiros, of the dividends of her assets. The halacha is that any assets that are rendered to be nichsei melug that she brings into the marriage, if she brings in real estate or any stocks or any type of other asset, he is entitled to the dividends of all those assets while they're married. He is also entitled to inherit when she passes away. We'll discuss it in the next year, and it's been discussed throughout the Masechta. There's a concept of Bal Yoyris is Ishtoi, which is really only goes one way. The halacha is that when a father or a man dies, his nechasim do not go to his wife. His nechasim go to his sons. If there's no sons, then it goes to his daughters. The halacha is that she is entitled to a ksuba. She is entitled to get sustenance and alimony all of her life until she gets remarried. She's entitled to stay in the home. But she doesn't necessarily inherit the husband. Many, on a practical level, many husbands today, most husbands I would say, do write a will giving everything to their wife. And we're going to discuss in today's shiur exactly, you know, some steps that need to be taken on a practical level. Benigea, the halachos of Yerushim, Peiros. And the Gemara in the beginning of the first daf and today's daf discusses the halacha of siluk. So a husband could be mesalik himself, could absolve his wife of any of these chiyuvim discussed in the Mishnah and in different levels. If he says peiros, peiros seyim. If he says atzoy for oilom, it has one connotation. If the husband says to the wife that I'm being mesalik myself, I'm removing myself from this obligation, b'chayim u'b'moisa, whether in her life and in her death, then he absolves her of, and he relinquishes his rights to inherit her. In today's shiur, I wanted to go through, on a practical level, what needs to be considered when it comes to assets and marriage and how to set up an estate in a way where this specific risk won't be taken, and that is as follows. A person works all his life, and he's, Baruch Hashem, he has a wonderful marriage, and he has children and grandchildren, and he works all his life building a portfolio, building an estate, and he has some assets, and he wants his wife to, if Chas V'Shalom, he were to predecease his wife, he would like that his wife should have what should be taken care of. But eventually, after Lachar Meiv Esrim of his wife, he'd like to make sure that his assets go to his progeny, to his own children. Now, what would happen? What happens if a person were to write over all his will in a will would stipulate that everything that he has should go to his partner, to his wife? There is a risk of his wife, if he passes away, there's a chance that his wife might get remarried. And if she was given the entire estate, and then she gets remarried to a second husband, this has been the case, and we have seen this where a wife would get remarried, and sometimes a very short time later, the wife passes away, and what ends up happening is, in halacha, the entire estate of the first husband could end up could end up being inherited by the second husband, and the first husband's children could end up not getting anything. And most times when we're approached to help set up an estate, this is a concern, and many people want to take care of this in a manner where even though a person's wife is going to inherit everything that he has, or almost everything, or some type of percentage of what he has, la'achameh v'esrim, what he has that when he passes away, he wants to set it in motion in a way where he's ensured that his children will end up getting the estate, receiving the estate, and not his wife's second husband. And I'd like to discuss today certain steps that need to be taken, that can be taken to ensure that this happens. So what we'll discuss really is in two parts. The first part we'll discuss what a husband can do while being married to his wife to ensure that his wife will receive the Yerusha, will receive the estate, and then it will get passed on to his children. And we'll also discuss what's discussed in the Mishnah at length, is what a wife who's getting remarried, whose husband did not necessarily write a halachic will, and she would like her to ensure that the assets of her first husband goes to her children from her first marriage, what she can do and what she needs to do to take to ensure that the second husband does not inherit the estate of the first husband. So when we talk about a couple coming to write a will, it's obvious that it's important for both the husband and the wife to write a will, and most times the will be written as a mirror, that it'll be the same concept will occur whether the husband predeceases the wife or the wife predeceases the husband. And when the wife predeceases the husband, we don't have that concern, and the reason is because if a husband were to get remarried, his assets, according to halacha, will not go to the second wife. As we mentioned earlier, even though the halacha is that a baal is yorish as ishtoi, the husband does inherit the wife's assets, but the wife does not inherit the husband. So if, in our example, there's a husband and wife that are happily married, and together they built a family and they built an estate, and the husband is worried, the husband wants his assets to go to his children, he doesn't really have to worry as far as the second marriage is concerned, because anything that the husband and wife created as an estate together, will go with him to the second marriage. And if he were to predecease his second wife, she would only be entitled to ksuba again, and she would not inherit any of the assets that the husband has from the first marriage. And the halacha would be that the estate would be get passed down to his children and not to his second wife's children or her second wife. So this is really more of a concern when we talk about a husband predeceasing a wife, and the wife were to take the estate and then she will get remarried. If nothing is set in motion, there is the risk of the second husband inheriting everything that the first husband left to his wife. And therefore, there are a few different ideas and tools that are put into a will, into a halachic will. And one is that there's basically two ways that are suggested, which obviously this is something that should be discussed with a professional, with a Chesher Mishpah professional, how exactly to stipulate and how exactly to draft this will. But conceptually, the way this works is there's two types of halachic tools that enable this to happen. One is the tool of a keni al menas lahaknois, which when a person wants to gift or create a halachic will that will give his wife the rights to his estate, which is something that's not naturally the way the halacha has it. As we mentioned earlier, when a father dies, his assets in halacha naturally go to his children right away, not to his wife. However, if a person does want to circumvent that halacha and give most of his assets to his wife, the halacha is, we have to know that a person can't give everything to his wife, because there's a concept of ma'avur echsanta. There's a prohibition for a person to give his entire estate to somebody who's not considered to be a halachic heir. The wife is not a halachic heir, and therefore the sons or the daughters, the children, are the ones that really, al pi halacha, have to be the yorshim. So a person cannot give everything over to his wife. Halacha is that if a person upon death lets a certain respectable portion to go down to his halachic heirs, his sons or his daughters, then he's allowed to gift over or create a halachic will that will be able to give his wife all the assets. And that halachic will is done in many different ways. We'll discuss the two most relevant ways. And one, the first halachic tool that's written in a will that will effectively allow a woman, a wife, to get the Yerusha of her husband, is what's called a matana of shoachas koidem misosay. If a person wants to gift over everything to his wife, he can create a document that states that I hereby gift over my estate to my wife, and this gift shall be chal, it should be effective as of 1 hour prior to the person's death. And therefore, as soon as he dies, 1 hour previously, this gift went into effect. And even though in halacha, if somebody passes away, automatically everything he owns goes to his halachic heirs, to his sons or his daughters. But if he wrote a gift document, a halachic will which stipulates that everything should go to my wife, and it should be gifted over 1 hour prior to death, so that would happen, that would take effect, and 1 hour prior to this man's death, his wife will be the owner of all of his assets. And that's how a person can effectively give a Yerusha away to somebody who is not considered a halachic heir. Another concept is what's called the shtar chatzi zochar. It's a terminology that's brought down in the Poskim, and it's a little bit of a complex issue, and we'll take 1 minute out to explain what a shtar chatzi zochar is. It's basically a indebtedness that a testator, that person who's writing a will, if he wants to benefit, he wants to give his assets, some of his assets or all of his assets, to one, a beneficiary like his wife, who is not necessarily a halachic heir, the way a person could effectively circumvent the Yerusha in that manner to give it to this person is he will draft a note of indebtedness, that he and his assets are all obligated, are hereby obligated to this beneficiary, a certain very large sum of money. And this large debt is effective if the halachic heirs do not carry out, do not respect the will that I have willed in my civil will or my rots and my will to give everything to my wife. This large debt should take effect, and that since it's an effective debt from him and his assets, when he passes away, all his halachic heirs are obligated to pay the beneficiaries this very large sum of money unless they carry out the will. And this basically is a tool which forces the Yorshim to carry out the will effectively. So these are one of these two ways how to draft a will which will effectively give over a person's estate to the people that he would like, the beneficiaries that he has in mind. Now, what's important to note is that we mentioned earlier, both a husband and a wife must draft a will. Now, when a married woman drafts a will, she is subject to the takana of usha. Now, we just mentioned that the best way to draft a will effectively is the shtar chatzizacha, which is a person creates upon themselves a note of indebtedness, a chayv, an obligation to pay a large sum of money. Now, when a married woman does that, when a married woman incurs a debt, that debt can be null and void, can be nullified, based on the takanas usha we learned in the previous parak, in the 8th parak of Ksuvis, that the ube usha iskinu, ha'isha she'machra benichse melug b'chaye ba'la ha'ba'al moitzi miyada l'kuchais. A woman who sells an asset, the husband has the ability to nullify that sale. And the same concept would be if a woman incurs indebtedness to, let's say, her daughter. Now, the halacha is, we said that the husband inherits his wife. What happens if a woman writes a will and she wants to give her assets not to her husband, rather to her children? The halacha is that the Baal is Yairish. In order for the Baal not to inherit, she has to create a note of indebtedness to the beneficiaries, to her children, who she would like to be the beneficiaries of her estate. So if she incurs, the problem is that if she incurs this note of indebtedness, the husband could nullify the debt. A woman does not have the power to create a debt if she's married based on the Takanas Usha. She can't sell an asset, and she wouldn't be able to create a debt either. And therefore, if a woman were to write a will based on this concept of shtar chatzizacha, it's important that her husband signs the will as well. If the husband also signs the will, then that would give. There's basically a paragraph that the husband gives the rights to the wife and allows this debt to take place, and that would really effectively effectuate the will, and she and the woman would be able to be manchil and would be able to give over her estate to her children. So really, that could be done if a husband wants to ensure that his wife will get the estate, and after her lacha me'eva esrim, all of his assets that were entrusted with her will go to his children. The husband can do it in one of two ways. Either he can give it to her, a gift of 1 hour, Sha'achas Kaida Misasa, which we discussed earlier, and that gift is effective 1 hour before death, but he should give it to her with the condition, with a special Tanai, Mehilchas Tanoim, a special condition that I'm giving you this gift with the condition that you further give it to my children after your death. And if you don't give it to my children 1 hour prior to death, then this gift should be null and void, and in that way she's obligated and she's bound to gift all the assets to the children, and that is one way that he can ensure that the assets go to the children. And the second way is to split up the assets in a manner where he's giving the gift to the children right away. Now he wants his wife to receive all the assets upon his death, but he wants the children to get it after the wife passes away, lachem eva esra. So another mahalach, another way to enforce this in halacha, is that to give a gift of what's called guf and peiros. Whenever a person gives a gift, there's every asset really is split up into two different parts. There's the guf of the asset, the actual, let's say we're talking about real estate. So we're talking about the actual real estate of the asset, and then there's also the dividends, the rent roll, and any profits that come from the asset. So what is suggested to do is to, if a person wants to ensure that his children will get it, the person could gift over his assets. The guf, the principal of the asset, should go right away to the children. and he can give his wife the peiros. He give his wife the dividends of this asset, and thereby his wife will be able to control and to use and to utilize all the dividends that come from the asset all of her life. And as soon as she passes away, the asset itself goes to the children who have already the guf. They already own the principal of the asset. And as soon as the wife passes away, the payers will automatically go to the children, and it would not be subject to the Yerusha that the second husband would inherit, the Yerusha's Habal. And that's all how a first husband can draft a will in a manner where he can rest assured that his assets will go to his wife, and then after his wife's demise, they would transfer over to his children, and it would not be subject to the Yerusha Sabal of the second husband. If that wasn't done, and the first husband died without a will or without taking care of it halachically, then there are a few different ways how a woman who's getting married for the second time could ensure that her children get the asset. One way is called the Shtam of Rachas, which was discussed in previous Shiurim, where a woman has the ability to give away all her assets, and she can give it in a way where if for whatever reason the second marriage is terminated, if she gives it in a way in this unique type of matana, which is called a matana of Rachas, a Shtam of Rachas, that where a woman is trying to ensure that her husband does not inherit any of her assets, that could be chal. Another manner which is the more classical way is the concept that's discussed in today's Gemara, the concept of siluk. A woman getting married could have, you know, most second marriages, civilly in secular law, the lawyers draft up a prenuptial agreement, and that prenuptial agreement has to be reviewed and made sure it's halachically correct, because in halacha we have the concept of, you know, the Gemara at the bottom of Shimon ben Gamliel tells us the bottom of the Mishnah that if you just stipulate in Mesa Yerushena, it wouldn't work because it's Masa Masha Kosova Torah. If it is a machlekes, if Yerusha Habal is daraisa or derabanan, is this considered masa mashikos of a Torah? But what is done is the husband writes a shtar siluk where he is masalik himself and he relieves himself of any and all rights to the Yerusha or to payrois or to maisiyadayim, to any wages or whatever it is that they agree to. And this is this concept of siluk is instituted that the shtar siluk is signed, and it is very interesting. Like we see in this Gemara, that this shtar siluk has to be signed between the kedushin and the nisuin. Now, in the olden days, the kedushin was at one point, and the nisuin was 12 months later, so it wasn't really much of an issue to sign a shtar siluk. Between Kedushin and the Suin. However, today, we know that the Kedushin is done under the Chuppah. The ring is given, Harayat Mekudesh is libet Ba'azu Kedas Moshe Yisrael, and the Kedushin is done under the Chuppah. And then the Suin is also under the Chuppah. And this is something there is a question exactly what procedure one does, how it can get done, but this is something that has to take place under the chuppah. The chatchila, the best way is if they can sign the agreement under the chuppah. That's definitely commendable. It's just, a lot of times people would rather not make a whole scene under the chuppah, signing documents. So it could be set up in a way that the documents could be signed before the kedushin, and then under the chuppah, the shtar itself is given over from the husband to the wife in front of Edim, and the husband accepts upon himself everything that's stipulated in the agreement, and that's how one can execute a halachic prenuptial agreement under the chuppah, which is, you know, something that's of interest, and it's very time sensitive. You know, so one of those two ways. There are other ways to deal with it, but those are really the two most conventional ways. What's usually done is the shtar siluk, which is done under the chuppah. Sometimes you'll see by a second marriage, there's an extra, you know, added procedure that's done under the chuppah that's not usually in the first marriage, where most times these issues are not brought up due to the fact that the young couple usually doesn't have a significant amount of assets that there's a need to write any type of siluk, and usually most first marriages are entered into with the understanding that the Baal will get the mezainis, and will give mezainis, and will get the ma'isi adayim, and the Baal will inherit his wife, like it's stipulated in halacha. But if the person wants to set up a marriage in that way, based on today's Gemara, and based on these eitzes that we just discussed, it is usually anything in Hilchas Yerusha and other inyanim can be done if it's done properly, and it's just very important to take care of these things. It's usually not a very big deal, but it must it just has to be taken care of. So it is definitely worthwhile discussing these things when setting up a will, when setting up an estate, whether a person's married on his first marriage or they're entering into a second marriage. It is kedai to have these things taken care of properly.
The Daf Yomi Halacha series has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center. To sign up for the Halacha Center's weekly interactive e-journal, please email subscribe to info@thehalachacenter.org.